Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and our guest for tonight is Superior Court Judge James P. Gray, the author of Why Our Drug War Has Failed and What We Can Do About It, a judicial indictment of the war on drugs.
And Judge Gray is also now running for a U.S. Senate seat in the state of California. And I don't have a lot of news tonight. I want to get right with the judge. But I want to introduce him by first giving you all a bit of history about Cultural Baggage, about the Drug Truth Network, about where this all started. And it started on the online forum of the New York Times, of all places. And they have a place there's called the Drug Reform Forum. And what they do is they discuss the pluses and the minuses, the wherewithal of the drug war, the mechanisms of what makes it work. And the participants, you know, wanted to do something more. And I suggested, why don't we bring on some people, notables within drug reform? Why don't we make it possible for more people to hear the words of these people? And I had previously met Judge James P. Gray. He was in Houston, gave a speech, and I was knocked out. The man understands the situation and has some good ideas on how we might make some changes to better our nation, to better our future. And so I asked him, and he was kind enough to come on the New York Times, and through his participation, many others followed, including Nobel laureates, you know, congressmen, people from senators from other nations, and you know, the abstracts, the people that drove a hemp car across America. We interviewed them, and it gave me the opportunity to come to Pacifica with my idea and to say, you know, maybe we could put this on the airwaves. And you know who I called on when they said, go ahead, Dean, give it a shot? You know who I called first? Our guest for tonight, Judge James P. Gray. Judge Gray, are you with us, sir?
Yes, Dean. Can you hear me?
I hear you, sir. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just great. Matter of fact, life is good.
Isn't it, though? Tell us a little bit about what you're up to. I hear you're running for the U.S. Senate seat.
Well, Dean, I am. You know, I believe deeply that our country is off the track through numbers of things. This Patriot Act is something that deeply disturbs me. And also, of course, as you've been saying and you know, our nation's war on drugs is bringing harm to the very people that we're trying to purportedly help. The war on drugs makes drugs more dangerous, and it brings additional problems along the way. So, yes, I have declared my candidacy as of November the 19th. I've taken an unpaid leave of absence from the court, and I am running for the United States Senate seat, and I request your listeners to support Judge Jim Gray for Senate, because they all can do it. And the watchword of our campaign, the slogan is, this time it matters. What the problem is, and I'm a libertarian, but the problem is when it comes time to elections, people agree with what we're talking about, but when it comes time to voting, they actually don't want to throw away their vote, so they vote for the lesser of two evils between the Republicans and the Democrats. But this time, every vote that I get will legitimately be seen as a vote in favor of, at the very least, getting the federal government out of marijuana prosecution and prohibition. And that way, every vote will count. And if we just get to make a strong showing, but just get maybe 10% of the vote, which I'm sure we'll get at least that, that'll be the difference between winning and losing for the Republicans and Democrats. And they're going to want those votes. And the only way they're going to get them is to change their approach with regard at least to marijuana prohibition. And if they do that, then we will have won the election. So I'm going to request all of your listeners there, and I know that now you are hooked into some places in California.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to request that they forward to me their email addresses. They can do it through my website, which is www.judgejimgrayforsenate.com. It's Gray is G-R-A-Y, and it's the number 4, so judgejimgrayforsenate.com. And then I will send them email messages about the war on drugs and other things and request that they forward them on to their folks, their group of friends, family, associates that they send emails to, with a suggestion that they also support this. And everybody knows someone that lives and votes in California. We're going to do really well in this campaign, because what's going on today is simply not working.
Yes, sir. I think the chink in the armor is there, that the two-party system has shown itself to be incapable of making the necessary change.
Well, you know, I was a Republican all of my adult life until a little more than a year ago. But I agree with you that if you're going to expect anything positive with regard to the war on drugs to come either from the Republicans or the Democrats in the next 20 years, you're basically dreaming that there is so much money in this, so much tax money that goes to support this incredibly large bureaucracy, that it will never change from within, and it's going to take this people's movement to tell them, no, no longer is this acceptable. We're going to repeal the war on drugs, and we're going to then stop harming our children, stop funding terrorism, stop corrupting our people, and actually, for those that actually use drugs, and I don't, by the way, well, I do, I drink wine pretty much every night with dinner, and that's certainly a mind-addicting, sometimes addicting drug, but otherwise, you know, but if people are going to use them anyway, hold people accountable for their actions, Dean, that's the secret. I have 20 years as a judge, and I've been a federal prosecutor and Navy JAG criminal defense attorney and the rest. The secret in the criminal justice system is to hold people accountable for what they do, not what they think, not what they put into their bodies. That's the secret, and that's what we need to go back to.
Yes, sir. It's quite obvious that 100 years ago, all these drugs were legal. There was no child addiction to speak of. There was no gang violence. The many of these problems are created specifically by Prohibition.
Precisely. You know, if I am a distributor of Budweiser beer and I have a problem with you and you're a distributor of Coors beer or something, I don't take my thugs and have them shoot it out in the street. We bring a complaint and we resolve it in court. But obviously, if I am a drug dealer and I'm moving in on your territory, you can't sue me. So you basically send your thugs to beat up my thugs or worse. And that results in a whole bunch of violence that is unnecessary. Our country, when we finally repealed alcohol prohibition, actually experienced a crime decrease of 20%, minimum 20% within 1 year, and it continued to go down each year thereafter until the beginning of the Second World War. If we really want to reduce crime, repeal drug prohibition, and we will experience the same phenomenon. And it's about time that we do.
Yes, sir. I understand our policy. I can't even really use the word correctly, but what we've done in Afghanistan, I understand it's now, I think, 38 times the production of opium since we took over.
You know, Dean, you cannot repeal the law of supply and demand. And as long as we will purchase this stuff, other people will grow it. And, you know, we've had people in Colombia and Mexico and Afghanistan tell us, you know, we would be happy to raise bananas or sugar cane or whatever, except that we can't make the money there. And in fact, in Colombia, we get so upset with the Colombian paisanos or campesinos who raise the opium poppy, but they don't have any roads. How can they expect to get their bananas to market? And they don't have any trucks either. But they can carry the coca by hand, if necessary, to the nearest small village. And as long as that money is there, as long as the demand is here, the demand will be met. And when it comes down to it, we could actually bulldoze the entire country of Colombia, take Bolivia and Peru with it if you wanted to, and it wouldn't make the slightest bit of difference with regard to our drug problems here, because if the demand is here, the demand then would be met by Thailand or by Burma or by Myanmar Republic or by Nigeria or certainly Afghanistan. So it's hopeless, Dean. It's absolutely hopeless, not so much because of the drugs, but because of the drug money. So these are things that we need to talk about. And in fact, if people vote for Judge Jim Gray for Senate here in California, I will make the issue of getting the federal government out of the marijuana prohibition business the referendum issue of the campaign. It will be the centerpiece issue of the campaign. And you know what would happen if, in fact, we could get the federal government out of this? That would allow each state, Texas, California, Nevada, whatever, to do what it thought was best for its people. And I would lobby the state of California and others to decriminalize marijuana for adults only, 21 years of age or older. And if that were to happen, we would have six things occur that would all be intensely beneficial right away, and then a seventh that is more of a question mark. If you have a second, let me just go through those
things. Oh, please do. Please.
The first thing we would see is that we would, in California, save about $1 billion a year of tax money in this futile attempt to eradicate marijuana. It's the largest cash crop in California today. And to prosecute nonviolent marijuana users. And that would save about $1 billion. The number two thing is that we could generate about $2 billion in taxes by decriminalizing and then taxing this stuff. We have a budget deficit in California, and so does every other state, but this would certainly help with the budget deficit. Number three, we would actually reduce the usage of marijuana for children. Now, that's seemingly what we're trying to do, but it's easier for our young people today to get marijuana than it is a six-pack of beer. Why? Because the alcohol is regulated and controlled by the government, and the illegal drugs are controlled by the mob, and the drug dealers don't ask for ID. So it's easier for our kids to get marijuana today than alcohol, and that would again be changed. Number four, for those people that are actually using this stuff, and again, I don't, but many do, at least they'd know that the purity was there, such that they weren't smoking marijuana that was laced with amphetamines, or it didn't have pesticides on it, or whatever, so the health problems would start to disappear. Number five, of course, we could totally revitalize the hemp industry, and that traditionally is a very profitable and magnificent market, and we can bring that hemp industry back into play. We get, for example, four times the amount of paper pulp from an acre of hemp as we do an acre of trees, and it takes about 20 years to grow the trees and only one season to grow the hemp, you know, things like that. So we could revitalize that. The number six thing would be medical marijuana. You know, it would no longer be an issue. We could allow, once again, medical doctors to practice medicine without fear of being hounded by the DEA and stop police from, in effect, practicing medicine. And then the seventh thing that has the question mark is, well, if that were the case, would it result in increased usage of marijuana for adults? And the answer, as far as I'm concerned, is, and again, I don't know, but I think that it probably would. We'd probably have greater marijuana usage for at least 6 months, maybe even 12. A lot of that would be, yes, it would be different, so some people might try it or use it where otherwise they didn't. Others, though, would come down the drug ladder, and instead of using cocaine or other more harmful drugs, they would actually revert to using marijuana because that's their drug of choice in the first place, but they're pushed up the ladder because of prohibition. But actually, I think after that 6 to 12 months, we would probably experience the same thing that's seen in Holland, where they have about half the marijuana usage in their country as we do in ours per capita, both for adults and for teenagers, because, as the Minister of Health of Holland said, we have succeeded in making pot boring. And that's exactly what we should try to do, too. Take the glamour out of it, take the profit motive out of it, let education take its way, regulate and control it, and it would become basically not much of a problem. We should do that. Every vote that I get, Judge Jim Gray for Senate, will be a vote in favor of, in effect, getting the federal government out of this and decriminalizing marijuana and turning rather substantial negative into a pretty good positive.
Very astute points throughout, sir. We're going to take just a short little break, but before we do, I kind of want to pose a question, and we'll get to it when we come back, and that is the situation in San Francisco where the Green Party candidate dang near beat the Democratic candidate, if I remember correctly, and we'll be right back.
In 1 minute.
For thousands of years, marijuana has been known for its ability to safely fill a pipe, a cigar, or a cigarette. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Oral cancer, periodontal disease, clogged arteries, cancers of the lung, trachea, bronchus, larynx, esophagus, pancreas, kidney, bladder, and cervix. Increased risk of miscarriage and fetal growth retardation. Sexual impotence, 25% of deaths from residential fires, and 400,000 American deaths each year. Time's up. The answer, tobacco. I personally hope Sir Walter Raleigh is rotting in hell.
Hi, this is Todd McCormick, author of How to Grow Medical Marijuana, and you're listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network, and our guest for this evening is Judge James P. Gray. Judge Gray, my question, again, about the situation in San Francisco. Aren't the times changing?
Well, Dean, I think that with our election for governor here in California, with Arnold Schwarzenegger winning rather substantially, that shows that the people are not only upset with the status quo, they're really angry. They see what is happening. They see this irresponsibility with regard to budgets, extremism, and they're ready for a change. And as you said, in San Francisco, we saw something rather remarkable. Third-party candidates really, I think, right now have a great deal to offer. And as I said, the theme of our campaign here for the United States Senate is this time it matters. Every vote will count. In fact, I say, don't throw away your vote voting for the lesser of two evils for a Democrat or Republican. You vote for Judge Jim Gray for Senate, and you will get results. So I think that this is going to be a great year. It's an exciting time. I'm really proud to be involved with it. Good things are really happening.
Yes, sir. There is progress in many areas, and of course the recent Angel versus Ashcroft decision has huge implications, does it not?
Well, indeed. Not only am I running against the Patriot Act, but I'm running for the United States Senate against John Ashcroft. And fortunately, some of the courts in the United States Supreme Court has come out with two really good and rather logical decisions, saying that, for example, medical doctors really can recommend marijuana or any drug to their patients. They're practicing medicine, and if they're doing something that's below the standard of care, then, of course, they'll be held accountable for it. But Ashcroft, of course, was saying, no, you can't do that. Ashcroft and the DEA went into Santa Cruz here and actually arrested people that were at a hospice center smoking marijuana. And actually, there was one lady who you've probably heard of was told by the DEA agents to get up, and she said that she simply was not able to, and they handcuffed her to her gurney while she was wearing a hospital gown and dying of some form of terminal illness. I mean, that is the extreme to which our federal government is going. And fortunately, the United States Supreme Court is stepping in on occasion and saying, no, these are things that cannot be allowed to happen because there is still a Constitution, even though we have an exception because of the war on drugs. But it's really easy to give away our rights and almost impossible to get them back. And fortunately, the United States Supreme Court is again resuming to protect us in these areas. And hooray for that.
Yes, sir. As a JAG officer, you saw military justice, couple of decades ago. What is happening? What is your summation of the situation where these people are held in Guantanamo?
Well, Dean, that is a really disturbing thing for me. Again, we are pushing the extreme limits, I think, of constitutional protection. To the idea that we have anyone who is brought into our system of government and not brought charges against them. I mean, it's been, what, a year and a half now that these people have been detained, quote-unquote, in Guantanamo. This is outrageous. And some of them are United States citizens as well. This turns the Constitution on its ear, as far as I am concerned. Yes, there are bad people in this world, and yes, there are people that have done some bad things, and they should have charges brought against them, and they should be prosecuted, and if convicted of any of these things, I tell you, let them rot in prison, as far as I'm concerned. But even Al Capone, or people like him, Jeffrey Dahmer, I mean, these people that are just absolute nightmares, they must have charges brought against them. They must be afforded defense. They must be able to confront witnesses. That is our entire basis of civilization. And if this government is taking that away, that is an extremist position that simply must be stopped.
Yes, sir. Absolutely right. I feel privileged when I get to go to San Francisco. Usually it's for the normal conference out there. And you meet such, I don't know, even the down and out are happy because of the treatment that they afford one another there. That I had the chance to meet Terrence Hallinan, and there were people all around with marijuana, you know, that he didn't need to persecute or prosecute, that it is possible to coexist, and that there are no axe-wielding murderers roaming the streets. Marijuana has not destroyed their city or their state.
Well, Dean, the most dangerous thing about marijuana, hands down, is jail. Everything else pales in extreme to that form of reaction. The drug prohibition laws are basically taking some problem areas, and some, like an illness, and turning it into a plague. They make matters so much worse. Drugs are just things when it comes down to it. You were mentioning earlier before I came on the air with regard to tobacco. I mean, tobacco is fully as addicting as cocaine. It results in more people losing their lives because they themselves internalize this stuff than every other drug in the world combined by a factor of something like five times. It's a very dangerous addicting drug, but it's considered to be a legal drug. You know, it's one of those ironies of our present times that, you know who contributes the most to this partnership for a drug-free America? Well, it's the tobacco industry and the alcohol industry. And, you know, that really is an irony. And why do they do it? Well, it makes perfect sense. They want to reinforce the distinction between licit drugs on the one hand and illicit drugs on the other. But other than economics, it makes no sense whatsoever. So let's treat these things as things, which they are. Baseball bats can have very beneficial usages and very harmful ones, too. I don't think we should make baseball bats illegal. And it's the same thing with regard to other drugs. If you look at it from a slightly different standpoint, psychedelics, and again, I've never used any of these things, and I'm not interested in doing it, but there are a lot of cultures, Native American cultures with peyote. There are cultures down in the Amazonian region in South America where they actually have ingrained psychedelics into their lives, and they use it beneficially, and they're under the control of the medicine man. Well, here in our country, we also have psychedelics, but it's not under control and regulation by the medicine man. It's basically just controlled by children and by drug dealers. So we're getting the worst of all worlds every way. We need to take a total fresh look at this, telling them finally that prison is not the answer, that you can't, in effect, incarcerate our way out of these problems. And other countries of the world are recognizing this, and they're employing the medical community to allow somebody that's addicted to these some of these drugs to get treatment, to have access to the medical community so their medical issues are being faced, while holding people accountable for what they do. And you and I and your listeners would all agree that if anyone is going to drive a motor vehicle under the influence of, you fill in the blank, marijuana, alcohol, methamphetamines, cocaine, that's a crime because it puts our safety at risk. And if these people happen to be drug addicted and they're charged with that crime, then we can coerce them into drug treatment. And if they don't get the message, we'll put them in jail, as well we should. But otherwise, it makes as much sense to me to put this gifted actor Robert Downey Jr. in jail for his seemingly cocaine problem as it would have Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem, or Rush Limbaugh in jail, actually, for seemingly he has a problem with prescription drugs. You don't want to have these people have to consort with criminals. You don't want to push them farther away from the medical community. You want to hold them accountable for what they do, but otherwise it's a medical issue. And eventually, Dean, eventually we will get there. And I have crossed the nation, as you had said. I've spoken to numbers of people. I've met some very, very good people. And they have arrived at the same conclusion I have from all kinds of different aspects, which is really kind of gratifying, that you see from whatever aspect we're doing it wrong in the United States of America today, and we need to repeal drug prohibition. So again, if people have any questions, they'd like to consort with my website, www.judgejimgrayforsenate.com. And then please, it's interactive. You can communicate with me. Give me your email. We will communicate. People, everyone in this nation seems to know someone that lives and votes in California. We need support. We need to, in effect, show that this time it matters and really make that strong showing. And we will change this dreaded policy that we have.
Yes, sir, we will indeed. And it's good folks like you that will make it happen. I want to go back over that website once more. It is Judge Jim Gray for Senate.com. And that's G-R-A-Y, numeral for Senate. Okay. And Judge, I want to educate my local politicians. I know that occasionally some of them or their subordinates listen in. I'm trying to get them directed towards the upcoming Breaking the Chains conference here in Houston.
Great.
And I'd like to check back with you as this political season goes on and let these folks here know how you're doing.
Well, Dean, I would welcome that. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. You're a good fellow, and you've taken an idea and you've really worked hard with it, and you're doing great. What our country must have is open, full, and honest discussions of these issues. And if we just accomplish one thing, we will change away from the failed drug policy that we have. And that one thing is, just because we discuss our nation's drug policy does not mean that we condone drug use or abuse. I don't. I hate these drugs so much as to what they can do sometimes that I want to change it such that we reduce those harms. And most of the harms today are caused by, in effect, the cure being supposedly drug prohibition. We can only get better from here. And it's just up to all of us to make this our personal effort. And if we do that, we will change away from this. And I guarantee you and your listeners that we will all then link arms together about a year after we repeal this failed policy and wonder how in heaven's name we could have perpetuated this failed policy for so long, because it's just obvious that it's not working.
How very true, sir. Judge Jim Gray, I want to thank you for being our guest.
Well, good luck to us all. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Bye, sir.
You bet.
We certainly don't need to play some third-party song to introduce this week's Hero of the Week.
Let's just kill them all and let God sort them out. Is this what God wants us to do? You won't hear this song on the radio, probably. Not on your local TV. But if you're inclined and you ever have time, you can always hear it from me. And the bewildered herd still believe it. Everything we've been told from our birth, hell, they won't lie to me. Not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth? And what happened to peace on earth?
That was Willie Nelson. He is our drug war hero of the week for his work with Dennis Kucinich. And Dennis wants to end this drug war right now.
Be sure to join us next week on Cultural Baggage when our guest will be Todd McCormick. He, along with Peter McWilliams and Rene Boget, were arrested about 5 years ago in Bel Air, California, for growing medical marijuana. It should be noted that Peter McWilliams, the noted author and activist, died choking of vomit because he did not have marijuana to help maintain his nausea. And, of course, Rene Boget is now in exile in Canada. Todd was released from federal prison in early December 2003. I want to invite you to listen to Cultural Baggage in the coming months. We will try to bring you many more voices from the U.S. Congress, as well as additional authors and scientists from around the world. And as always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, please send us an email to dean@cultural-baggage.com. If our interviews with such notables as Judge Gray or Todd McCormick or others interest you, I want you to know that we have more than 60 such interviews available online, and you can hear them at cultural-baggage.com.
Folks, as always, I have to remind you, because of drug prohibition, you know, we don't know what's in that bag. As Judge Gray was saying, we aren't afforded that luxury. So please, please, be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT in Houston.